why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking fact of
afternoon, good evening to all of you listening out there, wherever you may be listening. From the great American heartland to the pyramidal structures on Mars, you're listening to another startling episode of Untamed Dimensions with me, your host, Adam Gilreilly. And brought to you, as always, by our sponsors, the International Jewish Banking Conspiracy, undermining the world's economy since 1840. Our guest today on Untamed Dimensions is Jeremy Vaney, an apparent alien abductee and the author of I Know Why the Aliens Don't Land. Jeremy is owner and proprietor of the Book of Thoth website and producer of a couple of great podcasts, namely the Book of Thoth podcast and the Culture of Contact podcast. Two of my faves these days, I must say. Jeremy is the producer of a documentary called No One's Watching, An Alien Abductee Story. And if that wasn't enough, he's the director of A Culture of Contact, an alien abductees film and art conglomerate. In addition, he writes a monthly column for UFO Magazine. So as you can see, Jeremy's up to his eyeballs in all types of media centered around the wacky world of UFOs and their often interesting occupants. We welcome now the zany and enlightening Jeremy Vaney. You there, Jeremy?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. I got to correct you on one thing. I'm not the owner or proprietor of Book of Thoth. I'm merely a humble podcaster for them.
I see. You are zany and enlightening, though, right?
Well, that part's true, yeah.
Okay, zany. So tell me, Jeremy, how'd you get involved in all this crazy shit?
Oh, good. We can swear on your show. Fantastic. Well, being an abductee helped. Basically, I wrote a book partly about my experiences, mostly not. And I gave a copy to UFO Magazine for review, and they looked at it and said, you know what, we're not big readers of things, so we're not going to read this and review it, but we look at your website, we kind of like what you're doing, so why don't you come write for us? And it sort of snowballed from there.
Not big readers, okay.
They didn't really say that, but come on, it was up there.
So, go into that book a little bit, if you would. You say
partly
about your experiences and...
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it originally, I'm from Massachusetts originally, and I live in New York now. I've been living here since 95. And I had a series of events that just sort of normal, quote-unquote normal life events that played out like such a great narrative that I thought, I've got to write this stuff. And then as I was thinking about, what's the real selling point here? You're doing autobiographical material. It'd be kind of disingenuous not to do the alien abduction stuff and probably stupid in terms of, not having like a giant selling point like that. But then I thought, I've read enough UFO and abduction-related books that I don't just want to add to the mess. I'd rather do something that I haven't seen done. So in that vein, I attempted to do something different with it and make it more humorous and more philosophical in a meaningful way and not just, terror, and trying to set it up so that you at least believe, whether it's true or not, that I'm sort of a sane, credible person having these experiences before you even get to hear them. I think it's important to run down the list of things that you're self-aware about, molestation, parenting, whatever it is, just to get it out in the open and say, yes, I know all of these things, and these are not this. These are not the thing that adds up to this giant delusion, you know, of beings coming into your room and, you know, interacting with you for a lifetime. I mean, it just, it doesn't add up to me. It's one of those things, you know, these sort of debunker skeptical theories that pop up, and, you know, the latest one is that cultural and environmental and political fears are sort of what, you know, sort of fostered this, you know, like Reaganomics fostered this delusion of alien abduction. It's, like, ridiculous. I mean, it's one of those things that if you don't think about it too hard, it sounds like, oh, that makes sense, yeah, except that, none, you know, show me anywhere in history where these influences can create a three-dimensional illusion that plays out like a real relationship with beings over the course of a lifetime. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. So I kind of wanted to set it up to get that stuff out of the way so you would have nothing left to debunk.
So you say three-dimensional. You know, a lot of the abductee stories are not always three-dimensional. You know, sometimes the crafts become invisible, or these beings pass through walls and these type of things, which isn't to say entities from another planet or dimension couldn't pass through walls, but describe some of your 3D encounters.
I will, but first let me just say that, you know, there's this guy, Frank Soriano. He's, you know, taking film footage of these UFOs over his house, and he had an abduction experience, and et cetera, et cetera. But one thing that he saw was a UFO that, as it moved in the sky, it sort of looked like a plane for a second, and then didn't. It was as if pieces of it were sort of breaking through from another dimension.
Yeah,
that was sort of what he thought originally. But then he was thinking that maybe, you know, maybe just maybe these things can, since they can influence you and put thoughts into your mind, et cetera, that they were trying to make him see that so that he wouldn't be seeing this, this spaceship essentially or whatever.
Okay, like a camouflage, you know.
A camouflage thing, but either way, you know, it doesn't make it a psychological phenomenon. It really does make it an interdimensional thing. I've heard that before, you know, people saying that it looks like pieces of it go in and out of material existence, and there are multiple answers to that, but my own experiences, probably, I don't know, the most fantastic UFO experience, the thing that woke me up to this, was in eighth grade, driving to Vermont to visit my grandparents from Massachusetts with my mother and sister. And, you know, it's stereotypical, you know, desolate road somewhere between New Hampshire and Vermont. Off in the distance, there's a field, there's a couple of mountains, and then there are some more mountains. And between the further mountains, hovering there, tilted on its axis, was this round or oval-shaped, self-luminescent, green, brightly lit UFO. And it had round porthole windows running down the center. It had red and blue blinking lights. The top half was spinning one way. The bottom half was spinning the other. And it was just sitting in the sky doing this, you know. And we saw this, and my first thought was, it's got to be a toy, or it's got to be some sort of, like, lit billboard or advertisement or something. I mean, it looks so incredibly fake that if I were to take a picture of it, you wouldn't believe it. You know, like Gulf Breeze fake, you know, which, and who knows what those are. Maybe those are real, but, I mean, it looked as fake as those photos look. So, and then we get to our grandparents' house, and I'm thinking, okay, we're going to tell them we saw this thing, and then they're going to laugh at us. But no, in fact, they had Time Life Mysteries of the Unexplained sitting on the coffee table, and it turns out our uncle had seen a UFO with some friends camping, you know, lights that had come pretty close to them, and so now he was sort of looking into it as well. So it was like, it was a weird sort of very obvious technology in the sky coupled with the synchronicity that really woke me up to the whole thing.
Your family's all mad. Just kidding.
Well, not my sister, actually. She didn't see it. Maybe because she was sitting in the passenger seat and it was out the driver's side, she couldn't see it. Maybe the roof was in the way or whatever, but she wasn't really interested, and she just sort of was like, eh, whatever, and decided to read her book and not really look. So, you know, she's the sane one, I guess.
You know, this concept of UFOs or aliens camouflaging their actions. I really never thought of it about it that much, but isn't that funny if that's what was happening in a lot of some of the more famous cases, you know, for instance, like the Billy Meyer thing, a lot of his ships look like obvious hoaxes, but wouldn't it be funny if the aliens were intentionally doing that?
Sure, but then they'd have to not, they'd have to be using string in order to emulate that. But, you know, it's funny.
If they can come millions of miles, I think they can project string.
Yes, it's true. I'm going to steal one more thing from Frank Soriano, which is to take it a step further. He's talking about, you know, shape-shifting or, you know, living in human bodies amongst us, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he seems to think that the path of least resistance for them would, in fact, be to just influence us to see them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they aren't shape-shifting, they aren't doing anything except putting into our minds the image that that's what they are. I think that's kind of an interesting route to take and make some sense of these more esoteric accounts.
Have you seen some of this footage coming out of Texas of these craft?
I haven't seen.
They look almost, they're odd. The one I saw, it is like a shapeshifter, this thing changing its shape and swirling around, and it's very odd. That's the first thing I thought of was a shapeshifter.
Is it real footage? I mean, do we know that this is not?
As far as I know, and I can send you the link when we're done here, but this is footage that was shown on a local, you know, network affiliate there in Texas. So it's pretty interesting stuff. And a lot of people are seeing this thing out there now. But anyway, just a little tangent there.
Yeah, well, I mean, if that's true, you know, what are we left with in terms of good, decent hypotheses? I mean, like, you've got the dimensional thing that we were just talking about, or that this stuff really isn't what it seems, or at least some of it isn't. Some of, you know, maybe it's plasma, you know?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Or, you know, the trickster theory of this thing pretending to be aliens, although I don't really buy that so much, but keep an open mind to it, I guess.
I kind of do, but, you know, I base that on my own experiences. So the if you want to continue with your own experiences.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's funny because that was the thing that, you know, that was the event that really woke me up to it. But I'd actually had UFO experiences prior to that, and so had my sister. My sister, I remember when we were little kids, you know, I was out playing in the street with my friend Todd, and she and his sister, like, ran up to us and were like, hysterical. They had just seen something come out of the sky and a small probe come out of the bottom of it, go out about 15 feet, go back into the ship, and the ship took off, you know, things like that. But, you know, when you're a little kid, you don't think about that stuff. It's just like, oh. So it wasn't until after that big UFO encounter that things sort of started falling in place. After the UFO encounter, I started having, they might be neither here nor there. I don't know, but I make a pattern of it, at least. Flashback-type dreams, which I'd never had before. They were, you know, first person, and it was snippets of things like being taken out of my bedroom and out of the house by some unseen thing, you know, behind me or people or whatever. And, you know, remembering to reading Whitley Strieber, I don't know if it was Communion or Transformation, where he brings the cat with him so that it feels like a reality to him. Well, I was grabbing at this John Lennon portrait on the wall, trying, you know, grabbing desperately at anything to do that, thinking of that in this, you know, so-called dream. That's it, you know, a little snippet like that, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then when I was about 15, something really did walk into my bedroom, and it was no dream. I didn't look at the clock, so I don't really know what time it was, but all through high school, I just started waking up at 3:30 in the morning, so it's, you know, it's a safe bet somewhere in the middle of the night there. But basically what happened was I heard my bedroom door open because it makes this sort of specific thump sound, and that woke me up, and I sort of sat up in bed and, you know, up on my elbows, and this shadow person walked into my room. I don't know, it was dark, but so I couldn't really make out features except that I could see its head was bobbing around as if it were talking to me, and it was talking to me. And it had something in its left hand, like a long, sharp, you know, I thought sword at the time, but, you know, whatever, it was 15, so maybe needle or, I don't know, something. And it's just babbling, bip, 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 and I can't make out what it's saying, and I And I actually say to myself, you know, now I, like, bolt up. I'm, like, sitting upright in bed watching this. And I say, Ma, go back to, what are you doing? Go back to bed. Thinking this has to be your mom. And immediately think, this isn't your mother. You know what this is. And I'm just, the whole time, I'm just scared out of my mind. So, you know, fight or flight instinct with me goes to flight.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, getting up and confronting this, I just, you know, pull the covers over my head and pray, you know. Like, that's the last thing I know of that night. And then a few weeks later, you know, of course I asked my mom the next day, Ma, did you come into my room? No. My parents were divorced. My sister was in college at the time, so... But a couple of weeks later, she was actually home from school, and I had a very similar sort of experience where I heard the door open, and this time I checked the clock, and it was 4:37 in the morning, and nobody walked in. I didn't see anybody walk in. I just heard the door open, checked the clock, rolled over, faced the wall, and was just scared out of my mind, right? And the thing that's going through my mind is, they're here for your sister, they're here for your sister. But that's not enough incentive for me to get up and check this out. So I make a little joke to myself, you know, if you're going to tell the kids at school this tomorrow, you better make sure it's not your sheets. And you know what? I'm screwing up the story because that happened the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I hear they're here for your sister, they're here for your sister. Then I think, well, I got to pee anyway, so I'll try to, you know, get up and check this out. And as I move, the muscles in my body move the opposite direction. So it's not really paralysis. It's actually the will of my intent is moving one way, and my entire body is moving the other. And then when that happened, I was scared out of my mind and thought, if you're going to tell the kids at school this, you better make sure it's not your sheets holding you in place. So I try again, and, you know, nothing. I can't move. And so I'm just lying there scared out of my mind. And I don't know. I feel some sort of like a sharp sensation in my head, and then I can move again. I don't remember if I did. I don't remember what I did after that. I just remember that right before I woke up at my alarm, I had a series, you know, like 7:30 in the morning, whatever. I had a series of dreams. One of them, it was basically replaying the last experience where something walks into my room. I hear it speaking to me. I say, Ma, what are you doing here? I know it's not my mother. I mean, it just sort of replays like this, except now, you know, it cuts to me asking my friend Bill Donnelly at school, hey, Bill, did you come into my room? Knowing full well it couldn't have been him. Like, that's just ridiculous. And him, of course, telling me no. And the whole time I'm having this dream, I have the feeling that something, either my unconscious mind or some other mind, I don't know, is like laughing at me or goading me on and saying, dude, wake up and smell the coffee here. You know that, you know, this is silly. You know, it's not your friend. It's not your mom. It's not any of this stuff. You know what this is. Just wake up. So I think those left an indelible impression on my formative mind. But the interesting thing to me is that I never, in the younger years, I never saw these things. You know, I never got a full picture of what it was. Not that I can remember, but I just find it interesting because, you know, again, go to the skeptics, and what do they say? Well, TV images, things that you read, all of this stuff is what forms a picture of these grays, but you would think that to a 15-year-old, you'd think I would immediately go to that stuff. I had read Communion, you know, I was reading all that crap. So you'd think that that's what I would have seen, but I never saw anything because that's not how reality plays out. In 2001, in October, you know, I did see them, and lo and behold, they were short gray people, you know, so what are you going to do?
So the bobblehead creature, that wasn't a gray, or you don't know?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm assuming it was, but I don't really know.
So how did the grays come into your life?
Well, you know, when I finally saw them, I'll give you the second experience because it's less convoluted.
Sure.
Which is in October 2001, I had a lady friend staying over. I was in the same apartment that I'm in now, but I was in a different room. And I had a mattress on the floor, and I'm lying facing her, facing the window, and bright light coming in through my window wakes me up. So, you know, I sort of get up on my elbow and try to look out the window and see what's going on, and she's not awake. This isn't bothering her. But it is kind of like this foggy, diffuse sort of light, but it's bright. It's like flooding in, and this is weird. But I'm like, okay, it's not bothering her. Why should it bother me? So I roll over, and right there to my right are these three, you know, short gray beings with the big eyes, diminutive facial features, other than the eyes, and wearing tunics or wearing some sort of, you know, hooded Jedi cloak. I don't know. I'm just calling it like I see it.
Hoodie.
And so they're standing there, and the one closest to me is, I mean, they all have this sort of smirk. And I am of two minds at this point. One is complete terror, complete just bodily everything terror. Can't move, don't want to move, just freaking out. And at the same time, get the sense that they're playful and that there's nothing evil about them. So I don't know how to rectify that in my mind, except to think that that I just have this bodily reaction to them that doesn't really make sense with what's going on. And I suspect that it's that way for a lot of people, but I don't really know. Mm-hmm. So I'm terrified, and I'm getting the sense that they're actually saying, you know, hey, come with us. It's, you know, kind of nice or whatever. And the next thing I know, in that sense dreamlike, because I don't have a transition here, it's just the next thing I know, I'm standing in this nondescript room. I'm in my boxers, just like I went to bed in. Everything is first person, just like normal memory. And I'm looking at this row of tables in front of me, vertical from my sight line. And I don't know how many there were, maybe four or five. But the room is dark. It's nondescript except for the light that's sort of coming down from above the tables. And the woman, or the person closer to me, is a woman lying on this table, and you know, human. She looks like she, maybe her late 40s, long blonde hair, naked. Everybody's naked. Everybody's seemingly unconscious. And the grays are standing around her, at, you know, presenting as if saying, yep, this is what we do, you know, like show and tell kind of thing. And I'm standing there, and now I'm not terrified. So somewhere between my bedroom and here must be a sedation process by which I'm no longer terrified. And I'm thinking, why am I seeing this? And this female voice answers in my head, because you've always wanted to remember what an abduction was like. You know? You've got to be kidding me. And I remember us having a longer conversation, but I never wrote it down the next day, and I don't remember even how this ended. I didn't write it down because I really wanted it to be a dream, because even though I write about this stuff and talk about it, when it happens, it's just, I don't know, there's just something about it that's so visceral and nightmarish that, like, okay, I there couldn't have been light in my room. I mean, I live in Queens. Everybody in the neighborhood would have seen this. This had to have been a dream, even though it wasn't, you know. Well, cut to a couple of years later, and I'll make this long story short. You know, basically, I wake up, and now I'm in a different bedroom, the bedroom I'm in now. I wake up because there's light coming in through my window, so I think. I'm thinking, wow, is the sun up already? And, you know, I'm looking out the window, and it's dark out, so this is confusing because it's really bright in my room. Well, yeah, I don't know. So I lie back down, and where my wall should be is the light. So, you know, talk about these things coming through your wall and all that. Well, where my wall should be was this bright, I don't know, force field something, this bright field of this white light. And I don't remember anything about that other than that, really, except knowing that blood was trickling down the back of my throat. And that the thing that triggered this the next morning, the memory of this, was when I was talking to a roommate that I had a bloody nose out of the other nostril. And that just sort of, like, triggered the memory. So that then woke me up to the fact that the other one was not a dream, and, you know, you can't ignore this stuff. Once again, same theme in my life, stop ignoring this stuff.
Did you get any confirmation from any of your neighbors in Queens or anybody else who saw anything odd?
I've never asked, but I would assume that nothing. I mean, when I saw that my wall was missing, that to me meant that they're not in some ship up above my house necessarily. So shining a light, they somehow know how to open up portals and step through.
Okay, yeah. So, boy, that's some fascinating stuff. What do you make of all of this? Why Jeremy Vaney? Why have they chosen you?
You know, it's really weird. I mean, I think I might have thought about that stuff in high school, because I think when you're a kid, you know, you're narcissistic, and then you have something like this happen, and it's like, why me, God? Or, you know, look at me, I'm special and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But really, my sort of standard pat answer to that in the past has been, well, you know, a Roper poll done shows that, you know, millions of, at least Americans, if not globally, have been abducted. And so if you're going to have a pool of people, you know, I'm just a random person in a pool of people. But there is enough to this that it is personal, you know? And I don't know what that means. I mean, I'm not saying, like, I'm an alien, and I'm not saying, you know, like some people claim to be starseed or any of that sort of stuff, or, you know, I was something in a past life. I made a plan to be a human or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just don't know. There is a personal element to it. I don't know why me. At the same time, knowing that, I don't feel like it's a relevant question. I don't know why. I mean, it is and it isn't. It's personal, and so there must be a why me, but I feel like it's not really that important
mm-hmm.
to get an answer to. I don't know.
Okay, thanks for shooting my question down.
No. Well, I mean,
just,
you know, in the same
I
I'm shooting my own question down. You know, I think that every now and then. What do you think, Ed? What do you think about you with your experiences?
Oh, boy. If I was to ask the question, why me? I don't, boy, that's a tough one. I would say perhaps, just perhaps, I had planted certain seeds with an interest in these type of things, and I think there was some social conditioning going on. I think it still goes on today, but back in my teens, you know, was during the period of close encounters of the third kind, and there was a yearning in myself and also the friend who I witnessed these things with. There was a yearning to make contact and go to other planets, and perhaps in some way this is what I always come back to, that we played a part in this experience somehow, bringing it about.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible, I guess. It's
mm-hmm.
just that it's funny because, you know, when you go back and you look at your life, all of this stuff looks like it. I mean, you can point to any sort of odd experience that you've ever had and go, oh, my God, that's got to be related to this.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know if it is or not, but if it is, if there is a pattern with me, this stuff's been happening since I was about 3 years old, and I can't imagine that I had an interest, you know, at 3 years old. And I say that because my dad tells a story, you know, when I really started looking into this in high school, you know, I went and asked family members, you know, do you guys have any weird stories? Because they all think I'm nuts, you know? like, you know, nobody in my family is going, yeah, I'm an abductee too. But my dad said that when I was about 3 years old, two or three, that he remembers me yelling from my room. Well, he remembers waking up in the middle of the night and feeling like there was somebody in the house. He just couldn't shake the feeling that somebody was in the house, and should he get up and do something about it? And then he heard me screaming from my room. And he came barreling into my room, and he said, you know, I looked like I was still half asleep or asleep, but I was, like, sitting up in bed, and I was pointing at the corner of the ceiling and yelling, Daddy, make it go away, make it go away. And he looked up, and as if in reaction to just looking up, he felt, you know, I went back down to sleep immediately. He felt like somebody was behind him and then had left, and he immediately felt better. And so he just sort of stayed with me to make sure I was okay and went back to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, that isolated, that's neither here nor there. But, you know, if you put it in this context, like, it, you know, how likely is it that that was part of this experience?
Yeah. Have you
brought that to myself?
Pursued being regressed?
I did once. I in college, I was having a real hard time with this stuff, and I don't remember what I said. I don't remember what I said under hypnosis.
Yeah.
The therapist offered me free therapy. You know, so I must have said something kind of cool, but I don't know what it was, and it never dawned on me to even ask her, even through writing a book. And then the first radio show I was on, they asked me, well, what'd you say? And I was like, wait a minute, did she give me some post-hypnotic suggestion to not ask and not remember? You know, like, that must have been what happened, because I remember being under hypnosis for a few minutes and not being impressed with what I was saying, I felt like I was trying to sort of come up with stuff for her. Yeah. But I was actually under for hours, and so I just have no recollection of that. And I've since tried to look her up. Her name's Barbara Vicar out of Massachusetts, but I've only been able to find one Barbara Vicar, who's now like the head of a psych department at a college there, but she never returned my emails, so I don't know if it's the same woman. But yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking about doing it again anyway, just for shits and giggles. I would like to see what's roaming around in there, and you know, it'd be, you know, what would be more interesting to me is if it was nothing, if it turned out that I was lying about everything to myself. You know, like that would be the best next book I could write.
Tell us about the your documentary, what it's all about, and is it partly your story?
Yeah, it partly is my story. I for the first half of the film, I talked to friends and family, well, about me. I mean, I sort of got the notion that, you know, we've seen abductees talking about themselves and all that, but, you know, what do their friends and family think about them? What do they think about all this stuff, you know? So I do that, and then I go, this is sort of preface for a trip I take to Sonora, California, where I visit Mark Olson and his brother. He used to run a website called SonoraSightings.com. I think it's defunct now, but he was taking all of this footage of UFOs, and I'd heard him on Dreamland with Willie Strieber, and I got into contact with him after that, and he invited me up. I was going to be giving a talk in Sacramento, which is sort of nearby. And so he said, well, since you're going to be here in the area, why don't you come visit, bring a camera. These things aren't going anywhere. Nobody believes me except for Strieber. You know, like he went to the cops, he went to the media, nobody cared. So come bring a camera. And I thought, wow, he's got to be telling the truth or else why make the invitation, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the second part of the movie is my my trek there. And I knew that, you know, by going there, like one of two things would happen. Either it would be the freaky, nightmarish nerd experience of a lifetime, or I would see UFOs, you know? And, like, either way, I've got the ending to a film. And I won't tell you which.
Ah, okay, we'll have to see the movie ourselves. Is it available through your website?
Yeah, it's actually, it's available through Amazon and, I don't know, various other outlets. I think Indie Films and iMovie.
Okay, great. Hey, you mentioned you were having trouble with this when you were in high school, coming to terms with the experience. Have you come to terms with it now? And, you know, what exactly were you going through during that period?
Well, in that period, it was, you know, you have weird experiences like this, and then you read about it, and then it's, you know, just completely, you know, is this happening to me too? Are these things that I don't have a memory of also happening? You know, you read about reproductive experiments and all the gruesome stuff. And so there was that. But I just think having an experience that's so against what reality is, what you're taught reality is, I think it just messes with your mind when you're a kid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing to do but obsess over it. That's anyway, the kid is obsessed over things.
It gets you questioning the reality of everything, I guess.
Well, that's true. I mean, the good part of that is that it makes you a philosopher and a seeker and, in a deeper way than, you know, playing football would have. But now, I think consciously I have it under control, you know. I mean, certainly I can make jokes about it, and a lot of people actually find me to sound fake about it because, you know, here I am, this chipper guy talking about this stuff or whatever, and they equate that with BS artists. But no, it's just, I don't know, consciously I'm fine, but when it happens, you know, the times that I recall, complete terror. So am I okay with it? Well, I guess on deeper levels, not really. You know, I still haven't conquered that stuff, and I haven't changed the dynamic of the relationship, as far as I know, by conquering fear.
Yeah, but it has, I guess, transformed your consciousness to some extent, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it, at the very least, it set me on this path, you know. And I don't mean that in any sort of new agey way. I just, you know, everything sets you on a path in life, and this has set me on mine, which is to look at all of this stuff, and eventually I stumbled upon part two of my weird story here.
Yeah.
Eventually I stumbled upon Jiddu Krishnamurti, who basically spent his lifetime telling people, truth is a pathless land. If you want to know what truth is, you have to know what what truth is not. You know, positive negation. You define it by saying what it isn't. And in that way, it is. It comes into blossom or it doesn't, you know? And I really got what he was saying. You know, any path you take, any direction you take, you're the director. And so if you want to find out what's beyond the director, you have to kill yourself. You have to have an egoic suicide. And I, you know, he didn't use those words, but he might as well have. And I got that. And the second that I really got that, I had this moment of nothingness. And in that moment of nothingness, something, an energy, and I've heard Kundalini, I think, probably explains it best, I don't know, but some sort of universal energy or whatever, came into me, or maybe it's always there and it just lies dormant, somehow activated. And my head started to spin, not like The Exorcist, obviously, but like doing an exercise. My head just started moving on its own. And it felt totally natural, except when I thought about it, because you think about it and like, okay, this shouldn't be happening. Who's doing this to me? But when it's happening, it's like totally natural. So that sort of started this, I don't know what to call it, spiritual unfolding something. This process in me that ended up waking me up to things that I formerly made fun of, like chakras and, you know, various sorts of psychic ability, things like that, that I would always, I mean, for me to say I'm an alien abductee, what I personally need to do is be able to have something else to make fun of and say that's bullshit. So all of the New Age stuff, you know, chakras and meditation and all this crap is like, oh, that's the bullshit. So I can at least be grounded that way. Well, I can't be anymore because it turns out that stuff is real. And, or at least, you know, enough of it is. So the point of this is that while aliens didn't directly lead me to this, they didn't wake this energy up in me, they definitely know how to use it. They definitely are aware of it. And I certainly wouldn't have gone this way if I weren't an abductee.
Yeah.
So indirectly, yeah.
I'm quite familiar with the teachings of Krishnamurti, and it's funny you mentioned that phrase, truth is a pathless land. I used to have that on a SIG file for my emails. And Krishnamurti, in his younger years, it is said that he as well had some type of Kundalini unfolding within himself.
Well, it's the weird thing. I mean, he always talks about, you know, he always talks about this stuff, and then he doesn't say what happens next. He just says, do it and find out, which is great in the sense that, yeah, you don't want to create a religion out of it and have people just believing in what comes next. You want them to actually do it so that everyone wakes up and becomes enlightened. But at the same time, it would have been nice to know that, you know, your body is going to start moving on its own, and there's seemingly going to be other, you know, spirit entities there, and things that, you know, you just have no belief system for are suddenly going to come alive, you know?
I think in his teachings, what he really tried to get across was encouraging, you know, he didn't want any followers, and he was basically telling them, strip away everything that you've been told, you know, and try to get to that point of nothingness that you were talking about, where you can finally clearly see it all without all the cultural conditioning that we go through all our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. And it's interesting to think about, you know, it's sort of holographic. You know, you talk about the holographic universe, and, and you know, in one sense, everything is born out of nothingness, but it's also, that's true at the macro and in the micro level. It's true for us. That's what meditation is, you know, not the meditation of, like, breath work and mantras and all that sort of stuff, but the Krishnamurti sort of just clear your mind, you know, create nothingness by, well, not create, okay, there is nothingness, and from that nothingness inside of you bursts forth, you know, Godhead, essentially, you know, this creative energy. So I find that, I find all of that rather fascinating, and when I told you that story from October 2001, where the, you know, beings came into my room and took me to Narnia, took me to their place or whatever, the part I left out, because I hadn't talked about this energy, was when I was in my bed in the bedroom that I'm in now, and I saw I thought what was light up my window, it ended up being my wall that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, when I went to bed, you know, every now and then this energy will just activate on its own, and I have a choice whether I want to interfere and not do it or whatever, but I just like to let it play out. So what it did was pinch the bridge of my nose as if I were having a bloody nose, which I wasn't. And it's never done anything that pedestrian. It's usually things I have no idea about, Tai Chi, you know, whirling dervish type stuff, weird shit. But this was the pedestrian pinching my nose. And then, so then when I was looking at this, where my wall should be, and blood was trickling down the back of my throat, I actually thought, the next day when I was thinking about this, oh, I get it. Something knew, predicted that this was going to happen, or aliens, or whatever these beings are, used this energy to cauterize my nose, essentially, for whatever was going to happen, so that I wouldn't bleed out all over my bed.
Hmm.
So that was, yeah, I mean, that was sort of a clue that these guys know what this stuff is. Of course, the other clue was, do we have time for the big story, or...
Yeah, give us the big story.
Well, this is the big... I mean, I really thought this was going to be the end-all, be-all, and so why I'm still here as myself, I don't know, but...
is this breaking news here? Have you shared this big story before?
I've talked about it a little bit. I haven't talked about it in full. I can give it to you in full if you want.
We have 15 minutes.
All right. Well, good. Here we go. There's another quality of energy, besides the thing that moves the body around and wakes it up and all of this. This other quality of energy I've only felt three times. The first time, it feels as though a slit, sort of a hairline, surgically precise vertical slit opens up at the base of the spine, and this, I mean, humming energy comes in head to toe. And I know it doesn't mean anything to just say the word energy over and over again, and I'm sorry, but I don't know what else to say. Head to toe, and it feels like levitation, not levitating, but it feels blissful and fantastic, just head to toe, comes in, does that, leaves out through the same slit closes up, and I'm back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
This was, you know, the first time this happened, it was in the morning, I was, you know, thinking about whether I wanted to get up or not. Second time it happened, same sort of thing, it was like the morning, I was like, what do I want to do? Slit opens up, bliss energy washes in, and in on this energy rides, I even hate saying this, a demon? I don't know what, a creature, something, a gargoyle, I don't know. But some sort of, and I have no belief system for this, I'm just putting it out there, some sort of possession, for lack of a better term.
Well, hey, they talk about the serpent, the Kundalini serpent.
Yeah?
You think?
I don't know. I mean, you know what, I don't even read up enough to know that. I thought it was just called the serpent energy because it sat at the base of the spine and then, you know, coils up or something. I don't know. But whatever this was, I could see it superimposed over me. I could feel its feelings. It didn't really have thought. It was more just sort of a dumb, felt like a really unintelligent, ancient, powerful creature that was just sort of basking in the glow of being alive for the few moments it had in this body for whatever reason.
A psychic vampire, perhaps.
I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that I was, as this is happening, I'm scared. I'm thinking, oh, this is where I, you know, run and out of my room and slaughter my roommates and run into the street naked and, you know, then they call it temporary insanity. You know, like, this is what's going to happen. But no, it just was like basking in the glow of being alive. But, I mean, to see this thing superimposed over you and, you know, it's gnashing my teeth and all of this, I mean, there's nothing, again, nothing evil going on, just the feeling that this thing looked like every bad thing I've ever seen. And so maybe that's what it had to be, but it wasn't. So, okay, it and the energy goes back out through the spine. Spine closes up. Third time it happens, when I jumped out of bed, it was, you know, 6-ish in the morning, so somewhere around there. I'd gotten up, I'd gone to the bathroom, I came back to bed. Couldn't get back to sleep, tossing and turning. I'm lying on my left side, and again, I feel the slit open up. This time, I feel like there are people in the room. My eyes are closed. I can see light from outside, but I don't want to open my eyes. I don't want to move because I feel this slit, and I just don't want to screw it up. You know, whatever is going on, it feels like surgery, and I don't want to screw anything up. So I just sit there and let this play out. Well, I'd gone to bed with this giant headache, and that will play a role here in a moment. So I've got this giant headache. This is going on, and there's nothingness. I don't know at what point this happens, but suddenly, you know, there's nothingness. And then I'm aware that there's nothingness. So the moment I become aware of nothingness, now I'm seeing this, there's a visual of this, and I am this. So I'm having this identity experience of seeing it and being it. So I am nothingness, aware of itself, and it looks like a ball of water or something clear over black, and it stretches out in all directions. And I can feel this in my brain, and it feels like there's an elasticity to it, and it feels like it's about to snap. And I'm thinking, holy shit, I'm about to die. Like, that's what this is. I'm dying. And it does snap, but I don't die. Instead, there's this sort of snap and a tiny spark of light. And from this tiny spark of light, phew, the entire universe, you know, sort of the Big Bang, bursts forth. And again, I'm seeing this and I am this. So I'm seeing all of these planets and debris and solar wind and, you know, all of this stuff. And I am it, and I can identify with all of it and none of it at the same time. And at the same and at the same time, I'm aware of myself in my body as me with this headache, scared shitless that I'm dying. I mean, it just, how do you even have all of these perceptions at the same time? So amazing. And, you know, I'm dancing around to, like, you know, going to these various places. You know, I'm wind through the trees and I am the trees. You know, it's all very spiritual and whatever. And it all was sort of the same thing. It was sort of the same sense of I am-ness, except for being the sun. I don't know that I was, you know, identifying with the sun of the earth, but some sun to somewhere that seemed almost like a god unto itself. Like, it seemed very much grand in its aloneness, but not alone. You know, it wasn't lonely, but it was alone. Very much aware of other stars. I mean, I'll just say it. I had the feeling that stars are alive, you know, that they're beings. I know that sounds weird, but it seemed to have a joy in giving life to the nearest planet that could take it, you know. And I was identifying with being sunbeams going down to the planets, which I also am, you know.
You're a sunbeam.
I'm a sunbeam. I'm two scoops of raisins. So very strange. So eventually my perception hones in on this one sort of giant red planet, maybe Mars, maybe something else, I don't know. I had the impression it wasn't Mars because it was brighter red than pictures I've seen, but my center of vision is on this thing, and I hear, again, this female voice from the abduction say, the very hokey contactee, do we humans not understand that other planets cannot help us if we continue to block them out and kill ourselves? And at the same time, I've got, I can't remember what it is, Lizette Larkin's talking, or Conversations with Extraterrestrials, Lizette Larkin's, whatever it was, whatever the title of that book is, running over and over and over again in my head. And at the same time, once again, all of this at the same time, I am scared that this is it, I'm dying. So that takes over. I'm just frightened. So I really concentrate on my headache. I figure, like, okay, the headache is the one thing that I've got that's real here that I'm going to pull myself out of this with. And so I concentrate on the headache, and I pull myself back into normal body awareness. And I bolt up out of bed, and I start pacing around, and I'm sort of laughing to myself because, you know, to have this giant experience like this and to have such an awful, vapid contactee message just doesn't make sense to me. It's just laughable, you know. Like, who's going to believe, do we humans not understand? But I jot it all down, whatever, and I decide, God, you know, I just became God or the universe, you know, whatever, that sort of God identity experience. And so who do you tell? Well, I'll call my dad. He's up, right, 6 in the morning. So I call him, and I babble, and I sound like a psycho. But eventually, you know, I started to piece together what I thought was the picture, which is that the God experience was real, and the alien part of it, I was superimposing, just pulling stuff out of my unconscious mind to have something to be able to identify with. Because abductions, I understand. This other stuff, I don't understand. And so the Lizette Larkin's thing, I mean, the book title wasn't even a real title. It was something, it was almost like the real title, because I think her real book was Talking to Extraterrestrials. But you know, I've never read her stuff. I've heard her on a radio show. So I think I was just sort of, you know, unconsciously searching. Well, cut to a couple of months later, and I get a call from the Learning Annex in New York, and they're like, hey, we've heard you're a speaker, which I wasn't at the time, so I don't know where they heard this. They said, we heard you're a speaker, and can you teach a course on how to talk to aliens or something like that. Of course, I'm bullshitting. I'm like, yeah, I can teach, sure, why not? And they said, great, because we have this woman who taught this course. Her name is Lizette something. I'm like, wait a minute, this wouldn't be Lizette Larkins by any chance, would it? And they're like, yeah, you've heard of her? And I actually told the woman on the phone this whole story. She was like, oh, my God. And I'm like, yeah. So then I started looking up her books, and lo and behold, the very book title that was going through my mind in this story was, in fact, her new book. So now I'm like, holy shit, okay, so either during this experience I had this psychic brain fart predicting the Learning Annex calling me, which is sort of inconsequential in the grand scheme of things, or I remember, you know, the woman was saying, do we humans not understand, not do you humans. So I thought maybe the voice was Lizette Larkins. Maybe Lizette Larkins is involved in my abductions, and wouldn't that be the most amazing story of the year? So I got her email address through UFO Magazine, emailed her, and she had no memory of it, but she gave me this long, God bless her, this long, convoluted New Agey email about, you know, maybe even though I don't remember it happening, we're connected in a way that blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, it was a psychic brain fart predicting the Learning Annex. So, you know, this ridiculous, deflated ending to an otherwise grand merging with Godhead.
Right.
You know,
right.
And now I don't understand, like, you know, why am I still me? Like, what? Shouldn't I be Jesus now? Like, no, I'm,
yeah.
You know, or at least Stephen Greer? Like, I don't know, but I'm not.
At least be able to levitate on command.
Yeah, something. Don't I get a hero's power? Come on. I can't even turn invisible. Right.
Fascinating story. That's a lot to chew on there. I'm sure you'll be chewing on it yourself for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, this is the subject of book two, so,
yeah.
I really want to go into more detail, because, again, I don't read this stuff, you know, Eastern spirituality stuff,
mm-hmm.
Just because there's not so much time in my day, but I feel like, I guess maybe I'm being disingenuous by saying, with next book, I will explore things in a way that you've never heard, that these gurus and such haven't talked about, because maybe they have. But there are some certain things that go along with this spiritual unfolding that are kind of disconcerting,
mm-hmm.
That are sexual and that are kind of gross, but necessary. And I sort of I want to delve into those a little bit. And
well,
you know,
they from what I've read about the whole Kundalini process, it's at times can be quite painful, both physically and psychologically, as you go through the different stages of whatever it is that's going on.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't really, outside of that, you know, giant headache, I mean, I haven't really experienced that pain. And even
mm-hmm.
Krishnamurti talked about
the
giant pain he had.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I mean, this thing is ever present in me, and I can sort of turn it on at will. And if you go to YouTube and just plug in my name, just plug in Jeremy Vaney, V-A-E-N-I, and the letters E-E-G.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see, I did a little experiment where I hooked up to an EEG that, you know, was monitoring my brain waves, while I allowed this energy to take over. And, you know, I'm a fat guy and I'm dancing around and doing stuff, and so it's gonna look awkward and silly, and you're gonna be like, okay, what's this fat nerd doing that
mm-hmm.
thinks? But, you know, the real story is what's on the computer screen. You know, what's going on in my brain when that happens. And
yeah.
I think it's pretty extraordinary. I mean, it actually surprised me. Did you see that? Have you watched that at all?
No, I'll have to check it out when we're done here.
Yeah, because by the end of it, I mean, both halves of my brain, both hemispheres of my brain are just skyrocketing. You know? It's just crazy. So it's at least indicated by that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if anyone out there, you know, is aware of consciousness studies or anything like that, I would love to be a lab rat for free. I would love to get to the bottom of this and be able to prove it, you know?
Okay, there you go, all my listeners out there. We have a lab rat volunteering. Anybody's doing any? Sounds like the type of, psychic studies that were going on 20 or 30 years ago would have been, perfect opportunities back then. I don't know what's going on these days, but yeah.
Yeah, but you would think that an energy that moves your body around and, like, didn't exist prior to a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
you would think that that would be provable, that there would be some way to measure it or something other than taking my word for it.
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, the EEG itself is showing something's going on there.
That's true, except the problem there is that that's in your brain,
mm-hmm.
and I think that this thing certainly travels into it and influences it, but I don't think it's born there, you know? I think
yeah.
it really is something in your spine or lower back or something like that.
So, right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd love to be able to make that connection scientifically, but
yeah.
I don't know if they have the tools for it or not.
Well, fascinating stuff, Jeremy. Hey, before we sign off here, why don't you plug your various websites, books, whatever, how the listeners can find, you know, the best portal to discover the zany and enlightening world of Jeremy Vaney.
Well, okay, the book and the DVD are, you can go to Amazon, like I said, or BarnesNoble.com.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my main website is valians.com. That's aliens with a V. And if you go there, be sure to click on the blog, because the blog is not a blog. It's actually a portal to my podcast, which is my Culture of Contact podcast, and I think you will find that enjoyable.
Yeah, I really enjoy your both your podcasts.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do a lot less talking and a lot more listening.
Okay, yeah, sounds good. Thanks for coming on. We're out of time.
All right, thanks for having me.
It was fun.
Take care.
Well, there you have it, folks, another fascinating episode of Untamed Dimensions. Join us here each and every week for the continuing adventures of the Starship Psychopath. So good night, God bless, keep those cards and letters coming, all of you out there. In the great American heartland, to the pyramidal structures on Mars. Until that time, Maxwell, until that time.
This has been a Filmways presentation, darling.